India is running low on vaccines. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vishala Sripathma in for Victoria Craig. Good morning. Several Indian states have run out of COVID-19 vaccines a day before a planned inoculation drive as the country attempts to get a handle on the spread of the virus. Cases are reaching well over 380,000 a day, the highest in the world at the moment. India is the largest producer of vaccines, but doesn't have enough stockpiles to keep up with this deadly third wave, with only 9% of its 1.4 billion population vaccinated. The BBC's Arunade Mukherjee has the latest from Delhi.
Many states are individually saying that we simply don't have vaccines on the ground, pointing out that the stock that they have, they need to ration to ensure that those who have got their first doses can get their second doses on time as well. Many are questioning why didn't the government take proper stock of the existing vaccines before actually going ahead and opening it up.
So it sounds like there's a gap there that needs to be filled in terms of stock. How are states going to be able to do this?
So states essentially at the moment are in touch with the vaccine manufacturers. Vaccine manufacturers are also saying that there's nothing to worry about. We will be able to supply vaccines, but maybe not immediately so. The focus really for various states is to battle coronavirus on two fronts, trying to ensure that there is enough stock of vaccines so they can start this inoculation program on a larger scale. And they're also battling a huge surge in cases. It's certainly not helping the situation. India was supplying free vaccine doses to several countries. While that is all very well, and that was a great gesture that India did participate in to try and help other countries, why did India not plan ahead and say that they had enough for its own citizens at a time when the second wave was slowly creeping up?
What kind of implication will this have on distribution? Because India is the largest manufacturer of vaccines in the world.
Vaccine manufacturers are saying that they will need to prioritize India and India's demands at the moment. So authorities and manufacturers are saying that in order to ensure that Indian citizens are vaccinated, they need to prioritize their citizens. And at a time when India plans to open up its vaccination program to nearly 600 million more Indians, with states reporting shortages on the ground, exports are definitely going to be hit.
The BBC's Arunade Mukherjee in Delhi. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Eurozone economy contracted by 0.6% in the first 3 months of the year. It was a second consecutive decline, which means it's technically in a recession. Our economics correspondent Andrew Walker reports.
Europe's economies have been set back by a renewed surge in infections this year and restrictions to curb it. The decline in the first 3 months of 2021 was especially marked in Germany at 1.7%, although that probably also reflected the end of a temporary reduction in value-added tax. Although the Eurozone as a whole has experienced two consecutive quarters of decline, among the four largest national economies, that's true of only one, Italy. Germany and France both had some growth in one or other of the two periods. Europe's weakness is in contrast to the robust rebound reported in the first 3 months of the year by the United States, where growth was supported by government spending and vaccinations.
Andrew Walker reporting there. Let's check in with the markets. And despite those dismal economic growth figures, the markets board in Europe is trading in positive territory this morning. AstraZeneca is the top riser in London, shares up nearly 3% after reporting better than expected results. Never judge a book by its cover is how the old saying goes, meaning we shouldn't jump to conclusions about an individual's personality based on the way they look or sound. Experts in workplace psychology have regularly deduced that an employee's name can sometimes impact their career trajectory. But is that still the case in 2021? I caught up with David Robson, an author and workplace trainer, whose book The Intelligence Trap talks about this issue.
Researchers at the University of Oxford basically sent out lots of CVs and cover letters to apply for 3,200 positions within various different types of companies. Now, these CVs were all kind of identical, apart from they just changed the names so that they would either sound kind of traditionally British, like the name Emily or James, for instance, or they would make them sound like they came from other ethnicities. So Tariq or Adeola were two names that they chose. And what they found was that the people with the less common names in Britain, the kind of names that seem to evoke other ethnicities, that those CVs were like much less successful at getting a callback. In fact, people from those ethnicities had to apply for 60% more jobs to get the same number of callbacks as people who had the traditionally British names. So that's a really huge difference. And as I said, the CVs and cover letters were identical, so there's no way you could really explain it apart from some kind of bias.
But names can also be a problem within the workplace, in the office.
This kind of persistent mispronunciation of people's names if they're not familiar. And I think, you know, it's often not deliberate. It's just people don't make an effort to remember how someone's name is actually pronounced. But I see that as a kind of microaggression that just makes you feel a bit less kind of wanted or welcome within the team. And I absolutely think that would have an effect on someone's behaviour. It's just going to make you feel less confident, kind of less valued within a team if someone can't even be bothered to remember your name correctly.
And is this why people adapt their names then?
So I would maybe wonder if that is the case with people changing their names, anglicising their names. You know, I think sometimes we have to kind of do these things, take these measures, because it does just make kind of working life more bearable. But whether that's the right thing or whether it should be organisations that are taking the lead with this and creating this kind of culture or environment where that's not necessary, I think that really, to me, would be the better way forward.
That was David Robson speaking to me earlier. And there have been some businesses that have won during the pandemic. Here in Britain, the Naturist Group has reported exponential growth in events since restrictions came into force. A popular class is naked baking. In London, I'm Vishala Sripathma with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.